It is the middle ground between light and shadow, between science and superstition, and it lies between the pit of man's fears and the summit of his knowledge. This is Time Enough Podcast.
Welcome to Time Enough Podcast. It's where we delve into all of the episodes of The Twilight Zone and beyond. As always, this is Matt here. Joining me coming back is Charlene Schmidt, who is from the Mission Log Prodigy podcast. At least that's my main signifier for you. Hello.
That is the main signifier. Yes, I do other things, but that's probably, I'm hoping that's going to be the most important one this year as we ramp up and eventually get season two. Hey, Netflix, if you ever want to drop that date for us besides France, let us know.
What's the deal with that? Does it just suddenly shows up and now you suddenly have like 20 episodes to review?
I have no idea how it's going to come out. If it's going to be a massive 20 episode drop, or if it'll be one a week, or if they'll do like Netflix occasionally likes to drop maybe handfuls of episodes. So maybe we'll get five at a time and then we'll have a little pause, five more and so on. I have no idea what's going on, buddy. Nobody does.
That's cool. No, I would prefer not to be doused with all 20 episodes at once. I honestly like weekly. I think Trek and weekly is a good mix.
Yes. As much as I may complain in the time, like I really want to watch the next episode right now, if I get that chance to binge it, I will, and I won't appreciate it. So honestly, going week by week, and especially for a show like Mission Log Prodigy, where we're going to go for a deep analysis and all the things and make a show, a week is plenty.
Yeah. Yeah, I can handle that. No, I think the only show I've actually, because I've never been much of a streamer. So the only show I've done that with where they just dropped it all at once and I watched it was the Saved by the Bell reboot.
Okay. How was that? I never watched it.
It's not bad. It's nice to see the gang pop up here and there. There's one episode in season two where they even get in the building office and you're like, yay. And then, okay. And then it got unceremoniously dumped after season two. I guess not quite Zaslav, because that means you're never going to watch it, right? But yeah, they were just like, because it seemed like people were watching and then they're like, yeah, we're not doing season three. Like, you know, the CEO changes and they're like, you're making Saved by the Bell? What are you doing? Please stop.
Okay. Well, you know, honestly, I wonder if it's one of those things where no one was necessarily asking for a Saved by the Bell reboot, but we got it anyway and enjoyed it. And it was fun while it lasted.
That would be my review for it. And the new kids for the show were not, they weren't bad. They were generally pretty good. So I had that going for it. But the second season, I think they tried to make it look a little bit more like Bayside. Because the first season, you're like, this looks like a modern California high school, you know? And the second one, they start using that hall set again. And, you know, the principal set. And you're like, okay, this is better. Why didn't they do this in the first season? I don't know. But yeah.
Budget probably, because they had to. I imagine they had to recreate those sets. I doubt they exist anymore, but I'm talking out of my ass. I don't know.
They can't be that hard to recreate, though. I mean, you put some lockers in a hallway, you know?
Yeah, you'd think. But the way 80s nostalgia constantly makes comebacks.
Was it Jimmy Fallon who managed that on his show pretty easily?
Yeah. They can throw things together pretty fast on that show.
Yeah. Anyway, some listeners know I could go on about this stupid show that people like or hate, but let's talk about one that people generally like, The Twilight Zone. Today's episode is Mute, which on the schedule was like, I want to put Charlene on an episode and I put your name next to it. So how did the random matchup go?
You know, this was a good episode. I enjoyed it. And this is the first time I'm coming on your show to talk about one of the longer episodes. So I know that format changed a little bit like a while ago in the show's timeline, but this is the first time we're doing an episode that's more than 20 something minutes.
Yeah. So every episode, the question has kind of been like, does this work as a long one or should it be shorter? The scorecard so far was In His Image was probably fine. 30 Fathom Grave really should have been 25 minutes. This is only episode 4, I think. Valley of the Shadow. Oh, 5. Valley of the Shadow, and he's alive. Maybe it had a good 40 minutes, you know, but 50 was a bit of a stretch.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. This one was not bad. It was fairly economical, and I think if you tried to cram this one into 21 minutes, you'd be cutting out a lot. So one thing I did enjoy about this longer format is it allowed for more character building, more story moments, to let the actors tell you what's going on.
And yeah, and that's kind
that
of where
we've been. That wasn't a bad thing for this one.
We have had a few times where I'm like, oh, there's a few characters you might cut in a 25. I'm thinking this one, Miss Frank, the teacher, would probably, that you would just drop. If the whole school thing, you would drop in 25 minutes. And you still get the point across, but...
And come to think of it, maybe the school scenes entirely. All you'd have to say is Ilsa's never been to school.
Right. She can't talk. She's not going to school. And that would have sealed the deal. That, for me, being a teacher, I mean, I'm recording this actually at my workplace. So, you know, for that, the school stuff was interesting, right? Because I'm thinking of how I have to relate with kids and things like that. So,
yeah. Oh, I can't wait to hear your perspective on how this teacher did and what this classroom was like, because I have thoughts.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely some thoughts here. Before we get to the deep thoughts, let's get through the trivia and a bit of prologuing. So the original air date for this was January 31st, 1963. Script is by series regular Richard Matheson, who will also be sticking around for next week's episode. This is the last of three Twilight Zones directed by Stuart Rosenberg. As previously noted, his highlights include films like Cool Hand Luke and the Amityville Horror. And Jillian played Ilsa Nielsen. She'd later appear as a regular on Hazel. As an adult in the 80s, she also had a run on the sitcom It's a Living.
Oh, no kidding.
And I was just going to do an edit point here and finish the trivia later because, Lister, I didn't finish. And I just realized why. I saw the title screen for It's a Living and it sparked some young childhood memory. I went down a freaking rabbit hole, like looking at that and clips from the show. It did not finish the trivia before this
Love
episode.
It.
So I was going to try and get away with it like sneakily, but the audio quality is also going to change as I finish the trivia right now.
Cora Wheeler was played by Barbara Baxley. She was a Tony-nominated Diazin of stage, but also appeared in classic films such as East of Eden, Nashville, and Norma Rae. Apparently, she was such a close friend of jazz legend Dave Brubeck and his wife that they are all now buried in plots next to each other. Frank Overton was Harry Wheeler. We've seen him in The Zone before in Walking Distance. But his resume quickly gives you notable films such as 12 O'Clock High, To Kill a Mockingbird, and Failsafe. Irene Daly played Miss Frank. She was a Broadway professional and eventually transitioned to stints on soap operas such as The Edge of Night and Another World. Oscar Berenghi returns to The Zone as Professor Carl Werner. We've already seen him as another German scientist in the Rip Van Winkle caper and as a genocidal bastard in Death's Head Revisited. These roles are his main claim to fame, but you'll also find him popping up in Hogan's Heroes, Batman, The Wild West, and many more titles that warm my kitschy heart. Frau Maureen Werner was played by Eva Zoenyi. While she was an actor by trade, she escaped the Hungarian Revolution of 1956 and stood her ground on expelling the Soviets. She only returned after this happened, in 1991, and received multiple commendations from modern Hungarian presidents for her freedom-fighting efforts.
Okay, future me just finished that trivia up. Zara, if you could go ahead and give us that prologue.
You got it. What you're witnessing is the curtain raiser to a most extraordinary play, to wit, the signing of a pact, the commencement of a project. The play itself will be performed almost entirely offstage. The final scenes are to be enacted a decade hence and with a different cast. The main character of these final scenes is Ilsa, the daughter of Professor and Mrs. Nielsen, age 2. At the moment, she lies sleeping in her crib, unaware of the singular drama in which she is to be involved. 10 years from this moment, Ilse Nielsen is to know the desolating terror of living simultaneously in the world and in the Twilight Zone.
Maybe I'll start with just a weird bit of conspiratorial thought. This starts in 1953, and was it Austria, they say?
Germany.
Germany. Oh, it was straight up Germany. Okay. And then they come here, and I start thinking about Operation Paperclip, where they, I guess it was a little late for that, where they shuttled all the German scientists over to America.
You know, and what? Hey,
threw away a few of the papers.
That makes a lot of sense. That kind of thing was going on. Then the Germans, we know, were doing all sorts of crazy experiments for good and for worse.
I mean, I guess, you know, if you really want to get into some down and dirty stuff, this is a more innocuous one. Although they are screwing up this girl, maybe.
That's a question, isn't it?
It is a question. And yeah, I mean, later on when we get to the questions, who deserves what in here is definitely going to be interesting to parse out. But it makes me think of some of those, you know, thought experiments where it's like you have a kid and you put him in a room and never expose them to anything and see if they learn language, which they kind of did here, but instead they focused on the telepathy, which is our, you know, pseudoscience slash supernatural thing in this episode, I guess.
Yeah. So instead of this primitive talking thing we do, we're going for telepathy and I don't know, maybe some telekinetics as well. I got that vibe.
Yeah, she might be carrying it up a little, you know, when she gets to junior high. Actually, she might be, because at the end of this, it's like she's lost those things. So if X-Men style comes back later, you know?
Right. Yeah, that was a question I had, too.
Yeah, then Carrie would be kind of the sequel here. I mean, you know, for me, I guess there's telepathy and there's experience. Like if you're around your parents all the time, you basically know how they're reacting. You do know what they're thinking, even if mental waves are not being transferred. I guess the first of my teaching things is from experience. I often know exactly what a kid's going to say before they say it. And it feels like I'm reading their mind, but I know it's just experience, you know?
Uh-huh.
But it does feel cool.
I mean, it's basically like you're writing or reading off of a script in that sense, I imagine.
No, it's like, okay, please ask me a question. You're going to ask me what my favorite food is. What's your favorite food? Oh, my favorite food is, I say Indian curry usually. What's yours? You're going to say my favorite food is sushi. And then it comes out exactly like that. So it feels like I'm reading their mind. But also a lot in Japan, I think a lot of kids give like stock answers. So.
Oh, do they try to tell you what they think you want to hear?
Yeah. So if I'm like, what are you doing this weekend? Half the students will be like, I'm studying. I'm like, I'm not interested in that.
No, you're not.
Or what
although
are you
maybe
doing?
In Japan they are.
Yeah, they are, but they're doing something else too. What are you doing this weekend? I'm sleeping. I'm like, okay, well, how about when you're awake?
Right. So. Hope you're not sleeping all weekend. Jeez.
I mean, take a big nap if you want. That's fine. But unless you have a cool dream, there's not much to talk about in that context.
No, there's not.
But I don't know what kind of student were you coming up in school? I was, you know, the weird one that would give you weird answers, of course, which explains why I'm doing a podcast now.
I was a pretty decent student. I aimed to please. I wanted to get good grades. Did my work. More than anything, I think the other kids annoyed me because even when I was a kid, other kids bothered me. So I was one of those kids. I was born an old lady.
Oh, there we go. No, I was kind of like, I went to the smart kids school, but I was average at the smart kids school, right? So, which is fine.
Okay, well, here's what happened to me in school is we called it junior high or middle school. It's kind of the same difference. But by the time I got to that stage of schooling, I was taking the quote unquote advanced classes because there were three levels. There's just like regular for the, you know, the regular students. Then there's the enriched. That's the advanced stuff. And then there's whatever, like the remedial people who need to catch up to get too regular if there's deficits in their education. I did all of that through junior high. And by the time I was 14, I was so burnt out from just working so hard at school that by the time it counted in high school, I decided, screw this. What is it all for? It's not like I'm trying to get into some Ivy League school or, you know, go into some really selective area for my career. I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. So I did my work. I turned in my assignments, but it was so easy after that. I just slacked off.
Yeah, I also have a weird dichotomy where my friends were not the people that went to my school. My friends are on this podcast, 20, 30 years later. So,
because oh, nice.
I'd go off and play music and stuff on the weekends, and those are the friends I've retained. I don't really talk to many people I actually went to school with anymore. So,
yeah, same. We were all in the same building, but were we really friends?
That said, I've also had some of the people I went to high school with on the podcast before they get offended. So I didn't burn my bridges or anything. I just, yeah, the people I talk with regularly are actually my muso friends these days. Now in this classroom, So I guess what angle do you want to take it from? I guess I'm going straight for the school angle since you're, you know, a teacher
hosts
this podcast. But and then since you already brought it up, but
I mean, why don't we just keep rolling with that then?
Yeah. One thing in Japan that you know, I have a lot of kids that I teach aged like 2 all the way to 18, and even a couple adult students. But when a child has a learning disability or even like a actual mental issue. In Japan, it's still considered like a stigma. The parents will not tell us. So if we have like the most ADHD kid in the world, I mean, we can work it out, but we don't know exactly what the issue is because nobody told us. So we're, yeah.
Mm. So you've got to be really delicate about that.
Yeah. So for example, we have this brother and sister. The sister almost never goes in the classroom. I started teaching the brother this year. First two classes, he's not in there. There's like 6 kids like sitting there relatively, you know, participating. They comes in, he's roaming around the room. I'm like, well, I need to tell the good students to sit down and sit up straight. But I got this one kid that's like roaming around, but sometimes participating a little bit, and that's better than him not being in the room. So I'm like, now I'm doing a double standard, you know? So having to balance
right.
that out. I'm like,
that's
he's
not
here.
Fair.
He's actually speaking a little bit. I want him to keep doing this, so I don't want to like, you know, be like, sit down, shut up, you know, which I think Miss Frank might have done that. I don't know. Miss Frank,
impression.
I was kind of like coming from her perspective. I was not in being 1963. I didn't think she was necessarily pooping the bed until she came up with all the media stuff. That's where you're like, oh, this lady's out there. Okay.
Yeah. You know, I really credited a lot of her teaching style to this being 1963 because it was one of those. I don't know. I felt like the approach was you're going to sit down with the kids. You're going to learn what you need to learn. We're going to make you quote unquote normal.
Right. And the conformity, which actually in Japan, really, that still is kind of a thing in the school. Like my daughter, she's 14 now. And she's they went to, well, I took them. I didn't go, but I went walking around town. But to like this anime thing, manga anime thing based on one from the 70s or 80s. And I remember showing one of the other teachers here, just like, whoever went here this weekend, my daughter wants to see this. And she's like, oh, your daughter likes old stuff, which actually is true. I've also managed to get her a lot of old music and stuff. But that's kind of weird for a kid in Japan. It's like, we all like BTS now, you know, everybody likes BTS, right?
Sure.
You know, our favorite movie is Harry Potter, which actually I guess isn't so common to say in the West anymore. I think not.
No, not with what J.K. Rowling is saying on Twitter or X, however you want to refer to it these days.
It's funny. I regularly rewatch those movies. I never made a decision like, oh, that terrible woman, I won't watch them. I'm like, I haven't watched any of those for the past 5 years.
You know, I don't think I've watched any of those movies since I saw them, you know, when they were in the theater. Not that they're bad movies. It's just like that was an era. And going back to it is not something I'm particularly caring to do, I guess. There's just so much other stuff that I haven't even seen. So why go back and watch something again? We'll move on.
Props to the actors, though, who keep coming out and saying, please, we don't agree with anything this woman is saying.
Oh, yeah.
we didn't invite her to the reunion.
They've definitely spoken up for themselves and good on them.
But yeah, Miss Frank, I'll go up to my note, which is fun. My first impression of her was like the wish.com Mary Poppins, basically. So, and if you watch Mary Poppins again, like the 90s, not the scary Mary recut trailer, just the actual movie, you're like, this woman's she's gaslighting them like a lot.
Oh my, yes. She is totally is before long before that was a term. That is exactly what she's doing. It's like her whole teaching style is just guilting her students into doing what she wants.
And on I where I do the Occult Disney podcast, we decided to put on the layer that Dick Van Dyke is maybe like her golem, right? Like her unnatural assistant.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Which
that's not inherent in the movie, but it was a fun read on it as we were getting through it.
I like it.
that's the point of that podcast, if anyone's wondering. But yeah, nice. She isn't as fun as Mary Poppins, and she did not sing for us. That was too bad. She goes straight for the woo-woo explanation with the medium. So maybe she is a little more like Mary Poppins than I initially thought, or came around to thinking 5 minutes in.
You know, it made me wonder, is she tapped into what was going on? Was she, like, I had to go back to the first scene and see if she was in that very first scene. Like, was she one of those parents in the pact? You know, is that where that was coming from? But I guess she's just into woo-woo stuff.
No, I think it's like Bob Dylan lyric. There's something happening here and you don't know what it is, do you, Mrs. Frank? Because she knows that something's up with, well, obviously she's not talking, but she just,
right.
She uses the jump to conclusions, Matt, and just assumes that, oh, this is the same experience I had as a child, which honestly, I think when we meet kids, we're like, oh, they're going through the same thing I went through as a child. So I can understand that. But we don't necessarily know that.
Yeah, no, you're not in that kid's mind really, so you can't really say that.
Like in the atmosphere of this particular episode, I mean, the telepathy, at least, that's why I threw out like pseudoscience or supernatural. I think as a 2024 watcher, you're just going to say it's supernatural, but in the context of this episode, it is a science. I mean, maybe not even a pseudoscience, it's a science, because scientists are doing it and it's working.
Right. Yeah, it is accepted that this is a legitimate thing.
So let's get into that experiment a little bit. We're asking, is the German scientist from just coming out of the 40s being ethical? So that seems like a question that doesn't go very far. But I was kind of like,
yeah,
what's the point exactly? Of the experiment.
Yeah, was this, I don't know, is this supposed to speed up some evolutionary thing? I mean, that's not how evolution works, of course, but I guess the goal was to further humanity in some fashion.
Well, I did another one of my weird cross watches, and it's a living. Yesterday, I went to see the Godzilla X Kong movie. Do you mind a mild spoiler on that?
No, go ahead.
And if the listener is really just doesn't want to hear anything about it, you're 30 plus a few times. But the girl, if you saw the last movie, there's a girl from the Skull Island tribe who's mute. Like, you know, although she's deaf as well. They have to use sign language. She's okay. Deaf and mute. So in the new movie, she finds members of her tribe and they all now use telepathy to communicate. So they don't, none of them talk. They're all doing it with their minds. And I'm like, it's just weird that I went to see that movie like right between viewings of this Twilight Zone episode, which also has me, you know, crossing my wires a little bit, because I'm thinking of course, in Godzilla Kong, it's, you know, she's a capable girl, you know? So here she's, what do we get at the end? Do we get a broken girl? Do we get a fixed girl? Do we even know what she wants?
That, I mean, there's so many questions out of that one segment of the story, right? I can tell you my interpretation of it and see how that compares to your notes. So the whole moral of the story thing is all about like, what right do parents have over the choices kids have, that sort of thing. And Ilsa, for the very first time in her life, decided for herself that she wanted to live with Cora and what was his name? Harry. And not go back with the other folks and back to Germany where she would be working on her telepathy. I guess she feels like she kind of been there and did that. And now that her parents are gone, that was something she did with them, that she wants this new life, made that choice. And it seems like a fairly clean break, like an all or nothing. Either she goes full tilt telepathy or none at all.
And of course, her first choice was ignored, where she was adamant that she did not want to go to school. And that was forced on her. And then she got at least a week of like actual, you know, indoctrination, actual behavioral conditioning from Ms. Frank.
For sure. And I'm sorry, but that classroom looked hella boring.
We'll ask our parents, grandparents, and check if it was or not. But yeah, I agree.
I mean, honestly, if I was hearing a bunch of stuff echoing in my head and then having to be constantly shamed in front of the classroom, like, would you want to go? No, that sounds like pure hell.
Yeah, all I mean, that was the thing. By the time I was in the fourth grade, they were like, okay, these are the kids that get distracted if it's too boring. So, I mean, I don't think I have ADHD. Maybe I do. I don't know. But, you know, it was just like the only thing I get is in the first, second grade. It's like he finishes his work in 5 minutes and then just starts talking to people, which I probably do at my job now, to be perfectly honest. So I never got over that problem. But I mostly work by myself these days. I'm less distracting.
Oh, there you go. You don't get your evaluation at work. Talks too much to other workmates.
Yeah. This is the one I'm in right now. This is new, and we never have more than four people working in here at one time. So
nice.
But yeah, it's neither here nor there. I just happen to be sitting in here. So. So I guess it's a good episode to record from my school.
I mean, yeah, it's fitting. It's the appropriate setting.
But yeah. Just, you know, thinking about conditioning and think about, like, that was the thing that when you do see that classroom, like, yes, it's boring, it's not like my experience, but then you're like, well, what was my classroom experience like? What do I do that was conditioned by that? I mean, one of the big things for school in general is to get you used to that, you know, kind of 9-to-5-ish work day.
Unfortunately, yes, it Which is.
I've been working the past 2 decades basically from 12 to 9, but whatever.
I mean, but you have a routine.
I have a routine.
The whole idea, though, is to condition you into becoming a good worker.
Yeah. And Japanese schools, even more so, possibly, you know, because also, like, you're going to fit into Japanese society and do these things, you know.
Right. Do what's expected of you.
My wife was annoyed with me yesterday because I had the bathroom slippers, like, away from each other. I'm like, well, that makes sense when you put your feet in. But no. The correct way is touching each other.
Together. You know, we've all got idiosyncrasies like that.
But there's so many just baked in Japan. So that's why watching the school, I have no clue what an American school is like now. I haven't been in America for 15 years. And I haven't been in an American school for longer than that. So,
yeah, I mean, outside of a college classroom, I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. So I assume it's not an elementary school is not what I'm seeing in this episode, though. So
no, it's got to be a heck of a lot more lively, probably a lot more technology for sure. And as far as like technology or teaching techniques, I mean, it got to be very different. At least I would hope so.
But yeah, so I just felt like that maybe that school segment we said at the beginning, you probably could take it up. But one, we've been talking about it the most, so I guess it belongs there.
And right? Two, I mean, we're getting a lot out of this.
Right. That showed that she gets all that conditioning from her parents, whether it's her choice or not, to be this telepath, mute telepath. And then the school is breaking down all that conditioning successfully. So in the end, so. Maybe that's the Apparently. Twilight Zone. They're broken down by you know, tyrants in the
question.
Educational system.
Did the school do it or did Korra do it?
Maybe a mixture. Because I'm thinking once she has the kids telepathically saying her name to her, like, that's got to do something. And like you said, you're standing in front of the room. That's got to do something, right?
That's true. That's a good point. I forgot about that part. I wanted to give Korra just a little bit of credit, though, because she's the one who actually seems to at least care a little bit about what Ilsa wants and her well-being, whereas for everybody else, Ilsa's just kind of a bit of a pawn in some greater game.
Oh, the Germans are very clear. Like, they're like, yes, your parents were way more concerned about the project than you, although they were happy that you were a successful project. But
well, that's what they really cared about. Right. And they were committed. They did a good job with that, apparently. But yeah, in doing so, they also give her no choice. I mean, she was just raised into that and they thought they were doing what was best for her with this project, but were they really?
Yeah, you can't really ask a 2-year-old if they want to, you know, go down that path. So
no, I don't think so.
I mean, just another place where that does happen is you know, in Tibet, where they have found their reincarnated lama, hopefully at a very young age, and take them off.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So the llamas, the religious leaders in Tibet, like the Dalai Lama, and the movie Kunda illustrates this.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I feel so dumb. I thought you meant llamas.
So these are human children found at a young age that they're like, this is the reincarnation. We need to start his education. Do I have female llamas? I don't know. But anyway, they do. And anyway, the point is they're 2 years old. We're taking them to the temple and starting their education now.
Sure. The sooner to indoctrinate them, and that is going to be their life. That is what they know.
Right. That's why the current guy is getting quite old, but has to, like, probably feels a responsibility not to die because it's going to be a major controversy when it's time to look for the next one.
Yeah. But then that leads to the bigger question, right? Which is that, isn't this what all parents do with their kids? Don't all parents indoctrinate their kids somewhat with whatever it is that they believe and how they choose to raise their children?
Yeah, I think my mom always had like an idea that I might be like teaching in a high school, which she didn't turn out being too far off from what happened. I think she was thinking an American high school too, but whatever.
Yeah. So she got it about half right. That's cool.
Her parents were straight up high school teachers. She did some teaching, like a paraprofessional and stuff. She was never like a full fledged teacher, but just kind of like, I guess she was like, my parents were teachers. I did a little bit of it. It'll probably bounce on down your way. My father's side, he was a country MD, and none of the kids followed that path. There were four kids, my father being by far the youngest. So my father, one of my uncles ended up being a Episcopal priest. One of them, a teacher. No, two of them were teachers. And then my father like did pre-med, but organic chemistry got him. And then he was like, nope, I'm not going to be a doctor.
Gotcha. All right. Oh, that's interesting. So education definitely runs through the family line.
Yeah. But it is interesting thinking, like, when you look at your family, what jobs they did and what you're doing. And is there, you know,
sure.
Like, I went running around and ended up in Japan. So I wasn't really towing the line. But in the end, I did end up following this, like, kind of family tradition of teaching.
You did. I mean, you just put your own spin on it is all.
Yeah. You see the people around you that are related to you. And it's like points in your life, too. Until I was like age 18, I thought that at some point we all got hit by a car. Because my dad got hit by a car when he was like 10 or something. So I was like, gets hit by a car at some point.
Like a rite of passage? Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought getting terrible. Hit by a car was a rite of passage when I was like in high school.
Oh, no.
If I was like, wait a minute, you don't have to get hit by a car.
That's not how you get your license. No.
But yeah, I seriously thought that as a child. So.
Oh, wow. You know, isn't that interesting? These things that get into our head because there's just, we just think of it, you know?
Yeah. Or get sent the thoughts by a girl such as Ilsa.
Yeah, right.
Did you have any other big points you wanted to throw on this episode or observations before I start asking questions?
Well, I mean, I put out the really big one, and that was about parents and their children and who has the right and who has the choice, that sort of a thing.
And we're basically not quite finished with that.
Okay, good. I mean, that's a very big topic. We could probably spend all day just on that, but that's okay if we don't. I do wonder, you know, as Ilsa grows up, is some telepathy going to stick with her just a little bit? Or is this an absolute all or nothing thing, like I said earlier?
Been the trope in a few other, maybe you can help me remember the specific piece of media, but, you know, say a lady in her 20s or 30s suddenly realizing as a child she had that power and kind of forgot about it. Like, I could see this getting a sequel, Twilight Zone, where this stuff, she's like 35 and the stuff like starts to like resurge a little bit, you know?
Ooh, are you dropping a hint?
I don't think so. I don't think this has a sequel. Okay.
I'm just suggesting. Not intentional.
Hey, all right. The 80s did a few and the 2000s ones did a few. So maybe there is. The trivia did not suggest there was, though.
Okay. That would be so cool if they did, though, just because I could legit see that being a thing as a callback.
I mean, that's kind of Frozen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Her ice powers come back. Oh, my God. Ilsa? 18. Elsa, yes. Frozen, the remake of this episode. Parents are dead.
Oh my God. Wow, no, did Frozen that is... copy the Twilight Zone?
And, well, I have, again, people who are regulars on this podcast that maintain that Frozen is a very good X-Men movie.
You know, I so like that theory. I've never heard that before, but I love it.
Yeah, and I like that this episode hits a few X-Men vibes a year before that comic premiered. I think the comic started in 64, so.
Oh, wow. Cool.
But, yeah, I mean, this could easily be a Jean Grey story, although Jean Grey wasn't mute, but she definitely had weird telepathy and telekinesis. So, you know, not too far to get to the X-Men from here, which I always like.
Yeah. Which made me wonder, here's a question I had in my notes, which was, how did Ilsa get out of the house unscathed? And I wondered, question, was that telekinesis? Like, did she do that herself? That was an unanswered question.
Well, the way I got it was the parents used telepathy to lead her out of the house.
Okay.
Although
and yet they couldn't save themselves.
Right. They were trapped, but they could lead their daughter out of the house using telepathy.
Okay.
Which is why it's a science in this episode, because especially in that case, it worked for sure. I don't know. Maybe she found her way out on her own and just had a thought a voice was guiding her, because they're dead. Who are you going to ask?
Well, yeah. For
sure. So I guess there's always a little wiggle room, but I'm relatively confident on pegging this one in the It's a Supernatural. No, I'm arguing. Now I'm confusing myself. Okay.
The other
take
one.
Take two steps back. Yeah. I guess that's going to factor into the tripometer. Okay. But let's put it on the table then. Who exactly in this episode is going through the Twilight Zone?
Boy, the Twilight Zone?
Next week's episode, which we already recorded, this was a very easy question. I felt stupid asking it. This one, I'm kind of like, who did go through the Twilight Zone in this episode? They say Ilsa leaves the Twilight Zone. Rod Serling says that at the end, but
yes. So she was in the Twilight Zone, but like, you know who I think was like entering the Twilight Zone was the teacher.
Sort of, but she was
sort of.
She was weird though. She was like obsessed with like being raised as a medium. Miss Frank was too broken already. She's crazy, which could be its own Twilight Zone. Cora has a relatively positive experience with the Twilight Zone here, emotionally affecting her. I mean, it wasn't a pleasant journey, but the Twilight Zone seems to give her a daughter who also wants her, although even if it's through some conditioning or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to make the best out of a really broken situation, I think. And I didn't know if Cora was possibly entering the Twilight Zone or if it was just simply compassion on her part. But maybe a little bit of both, let's be honest. Because she did get dragged in just a little bit.
Yeah, the other one at the end, they say, what, love is more important than telepathy? So right. Then I'm thinking of the divisive end for Interstellar, where they're like, love is gravity. So love would not be more important than gravity. And then they did not bring gravity into this episode. But just as weird sci-fi concepts and how love works with them, and here let's separate telepathy, but in Interstellar it's very much no, we're going to combine the science and the love to some people's chagrin. I do like that movie a lot, but
yeah. Did it bother you at all that they went really bonk bonk on the head with basically the moral of the story here?
Well, that's the Germans. I don't know. It's the paperclip
are
scientists.
They very direct.
It's such a weird situation and such a vague experiment. I think putting a little extra exposition on that part maybe does give it some, you know, it's like putting some, you know, meat in the stew, right?
I mean, they came all that way to pick her up and then ultimately decided not to because she had already found an ideal situation, as good as this was going to get for her, unfortunately. You know, she lost both of her parents. It's a tragic situation, but she does have love. Someone she loves and who can love her back.
Of course, the Germans have no idea what to expect. They say they didn't get the letters because Cora was burning them. They did not hear, and they came because they did not hear from the parents, who obviously did not write a letter telling them that they were dead. So,
which that's pretty interesting. And then, okay, here's another question I have is, Harry only sent out letters one time. correct?
It seems like he did it a few times. He said he sent out a round of letters. So he, because it's only been a week that she's been there, and it's the 60s mail service. So it sounds like he sent the letters to several people, but yeah, one round, yeah. It seems.
Well, okay, yeah, because I mean, after a few weeks, no response. Okay, that's fine. Things get lost in the mail all the time. He wouldn't have tried again.
He might have waited another week because it's like basically Ilsa's at their home for a week, goes to school for a week, and then the Germans show up. It only takes 2 weeks for them to show up. So
not
they
that
must
long.
Have been.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So they're pretty like prompt. That. Yeah, they're pretty prompt when you think about it. But and they have no idea what to expect. So that didn't rub me too wrong the way that they're a little bonk explaining it and explaining that, Ilsa's parents were not actually that into her, you know?
Yeah.
But that helps take the edge off the tragedy of them dying in a fire and puts on the happy ending of her being
it's
with
true.
Cora now, with the possibly happy ending. I still feel like an exceptional person may have been destroyed in this episode, you know?
we may never know if there's not that follow-up in future Twilight Zone. I hope there is. I hope there is. I really do.
There's always time to make more shows.
right? This could still happen.
She ends up working at a high-rise restaurant in the sitcom It's a Living. That's what happens.
Does she have telepathic abilities? That's the question.
So for who deserves what in this episode, I feel like we just focus on the ladies for this. Miss Frank is worth considering. Cora is worth considering. Of course, Ilsa is worth considering. Maybe Miss Frank's the easiest here. She's weird, just subtly deluded, which makes her think that she kind of does.
I feel like she will get her comeuppance at some point. We just didn't see that in this story.
Yeah, but she's driven by delusions. It's like how this person seems crazy, but you just don't understand the reason they are, you know?
Yeah,
and the reason she is and what she's doing she honestly, you could probably refocus a Twilight episode on her. We've had delusional people in the Twilight Zone have to double down on their delusions. So maybe she
definitely could.
So maybe she deserves a different Twilight Zone episode where something rawer happens to her.
You know, I kind of wish that upon her. I hope so.
Cora gets her dream, but she also, she burnt the letters, which seems kind of obnoxious.
I don't know what though? I mean, yeah, but also, no, not from her perspective where she was immediately drawn to Ilsa, like, for whatever it was. Maybe it's because I did see a little bit of resemblance to Cora's deceased daughter, but also Ilsa sees a project here. It's a mystery, and she was your very typical 1960s housewife where this child is going to become her responsibility, and she is here for it. So she just immediately started investing everything. No one was going to take that away from her. She gets a second chance.
They'll laugh about it in 10 years that she burnt all the letters.
If she tells Harry, she might take that to her grave. I don't know.
I mean, the Germans did show up. She can probably maintain that fabrication.
She could little white lie that, sure.
Now the big one, of course, does Ilsa deserve what happens here? The thing is, I think that the girl we meet at the beginning of the episode and the girl we meet at the end of the episode are basically different people that actually have different thought processes.
I cannot disagree with that. That's a great way to put it. I would say first half Ilsa did not deserve to lose both of her parents in a fire, even if they did deserve to die in a fire. I mean, they were trash parents. But by the second half, and she decided her own destiny, basically, for herself, she did deserve that because she chose it, because she wanted it.
After a bit of programming. But she did make the choice basically by herself after some notable programming sessions.
Yes, there was some programming, but I guess in a way, did she just get to see both sides and then make a choice?
Has she properly seen both sides? She doesn't really know what she can. All she's done with the
she never will
is sit with her dad at a desk and go back and forth.
Yeah,
so,
it's true. Yeah. Like, she'll never know what the real goal was of this project because apparently it disbanded, so it's gone. So that's not happening. And then, yeah, who knows what could have been with that. But then also, she, I guess, can lead a quote unquote normal life now, which might be good for her in the end. Maybe that is all she really wants, is to just have a regular life.
And hey, the person that we have at the end of the episode could grow up and do something amazing, which, you know, in these series of events had to transpire, you know?
Right. So, you don't have to be a telepath to be amazing.
No, that's of course saying that the ends justify the means a bit too, but whatever.
Yeah, that's also very true. It's good to call that out.
But yeah, so I guess that brings us to the, we've basically been talking about if she deserved it or not, and for the past 45 minutes, and we still not really come to a conclusion, which is part of, I guess, the strength of this episode.
Sure.
You cannot, yeah, it makes quite you think a little conclusion. Bit. But where would you like to trip-o-meter this one?
This one didn't feel terribly trippy, and maybe it's just watching sci-fi all my life that telepathy is not high up there at all on the trip-o-meter. So I'm giving this a 1.
Okay. I'm going to go with 3, and I'm giving it context because it's like, well, it's a year before the X-Men, you know? It doesn't have okay. so many intense visuals. Like next week, it had my episode, which I recorded yesterday, has much crazier visuals to it. So that makes you want to up the meter, where this one doesn't really have many strange visuals. Audio stuff, for sure, because they got weird echoes and definitely cool totally. Echo effects. And as her telepathy is breaking down and it'll get like freaky sounding, that was some trippy yeah. stuff. So that's enough for me to give at least a, you know, slightly above average number.
Okay, that's fair.
Any final thoughts you want to throw on this episode?
Yes, I have one, which has nothing to do with anything we've talked about, and that is, don't eat raw egg. When Cora does that, I was just like, what are you doing, sweetie? Salmonella, E. coli? Not only
Rocky
does she
does
eat it,
it
but
Rocky
then
does it.
It's all over her hands, and then she picks up that phone. I'm just like, what kind of a housewife are you? I was judging.
Yeah. See, I'm not into eggy stuff. We have firman and soybeans in Japan, which smell gnarly and they're gloopy. The thing is, a lot of times all I have for breakfast is coffee and maybe an apple. But then I often do the dishes, and then I have to clean up all the eggy stuff and all the nacho stuff. I'm like,
that the is egg keeps runny and gross. Yeah.
Yeah. So sometimes I'll just leave the natto bowl. If you don't know what natto is, it's pretty thoroughly disgusting. But in Japan, like, it's healthy, so they'll put it on rice, and it tastes like goop. It smells like the worst feet you've ever smelled.
Oh, that's a turnoff.
But it's healthy.
So are a lot of other things that don't smell like feet.
I know very few non-Japanese that are willing to eat natto, but
yeah, I don't know. Maybe if I held my nose, I would try it just to see what it tastes like. But
I've tried it once. I've tried several weird things. I am a picky eater, but I've tried a few weird things. I ate inago, which is locust, soy-covered locust.
Wow.
It sounds awful,
but I mean...
Well, the taste actually wasn't that bad, but you're eating a bug. And you're like, I have a leg in my tooth, and that's not cool. So it was a situation where we were at a super countryside restaurant, and they service, like, here, try. And maybe they were trying to screw with me. I don't know. But and then my daughter's like 2.5 of the time. She doesn't know. She's like, I like this. Ah! So my two-year-old daughter is sitting there downing a bunch of bugs.
Oh, very flossing Lynchian that day. Night must have been awful.
Yep. Teeth in there, but
yum.
Okay, anyway, yes, I will support the no raw egg decision unless you're Rocky Balboa, who lives off of them.
Well, in that case, you do you, but the rest of us probably should refrain. Food poisoning is a bitch, and if you've ever had it, you know. I think that's all I've got. How about you?
That's I think we pretty much got through what I wanted to say. So a little snarky, a little depth, it all came through in the end. So we were talking about Michelob Prodigy up front at the top, but if you want to throw out where folks can go check that out and hopefully check out the new season soon. Hey, could be out by the time this airs. We don't know.
Oh, gosh.
Probably not. So.
That would
week.
Be amazing. Yeah. So if you do want to watch Star Trek Prodigy, you can do that on Netflix in the States. Other places might vary. And if you want to hear reviews and interviews, my new co-host Marina and I, we just did one with Dr. Aaron McDonald, who's the science advisor to Star Trek Prodigy, as well as the other Star Trek shows. You can go to, you know, any kind of podcatcher and subscribe to the audio, or you can go on YouTube on the Roddenberry YouTube channel and watch us. So that's fun too.
All right. As for this one, we're on Patreon at Podcastio Podcastius. You'll get episodes of Time Enough Podcast a little bit early with a little extra banter, perhaps. Weird edits in the case of this week. we also talk about really good movies and really bad movies according to the Internet Movie Database on Films and Filth. Base 1999 at Podcast 1999. I mentioned a cult Disney. And there's some video game stuff with Luke Loves Pokemon, Hyrule Field Report, just finishing up talking about Tears of the Kingdom, the new Legend of Zelda game, and the Game Game Show, where gamers game each other about games. Okay, I think I got through that. I tried hitting exactly 30 seconds, so if people have heard me say that 20 times, they can hit that 30, and, you know.
Wow, that's some talent right there.
Trying to do some, trying to do some service for the listener. Okay. I guess I'm going to go mute.
All right.